And I'll never forget walking out with the old left tackle, and he mumbled to me, the potatoes won't taste as good, this won't taste as good, the Steelers ruin every freaking Christmas. You know, and like, there is a true story to December and Maria. So those are the people that I think of, because Bah Humbug is real on Maria when you haven't won, the coach is getting fired, everyone's looking over their back, the quarterback's not showing up. We've lived through all these things, and I think the Flacco part of this, it's just beautiful symmetry.
Hi, everybody, and Happy New Year. Hope you are off to a great start in your 2024, wherever you happen to be listening to this podcast. You know, most of the episodes on Telich Talks have been about individuals with phenomenal stories who came to a point in their life, they made a decision, and they went on with great gusto and had a tremendous result as of making that decision. Well, this time around, we are talking about the Cleveland Browns. And you just heard Andre Knott, longtime media personality in Northeast Ohio, former sideline reporter on the Cleveland Browns radio network, talking about what it was like with December in Berea. It's kind of like that is the month, or has been the month, where everybody in that building in Berea, where the Cleveland Browns is, the organization is headquartered, is working on covering their butts because the season was a disaster and the offseason would bring all kinds of change. Well, it wasn't the case this year with the Cleveland Browns as we sit right now, standing at 11-5. They're in the playoffs and they have overcome so many injuries, so many bad things have happened to them. They have risen from the so-called ashes of that and have put together an amazing season. And so Andre and I are just sitting down and chatting at length about the good fortunes of the Cleveland Browns. We also talk Ohio State football as well. And as usual, if you like this particular podcast, we ask you to, of course, subscribe, hit that follow button, share an episode, send out the word about what you have heard on Telich Talks. So thanks very much to my buddy Andre Knott for sitting down and chatting with me. And I hope you enjoy our conversation. It is no longer December in Berea. So excited to have Andre Knott on. And Andre, you and I have had many conversations about a myriad of sports topics here in Northeast Ohio. And I can't think of a better story than the Browns' playoff success this year, getting to the playoffs, and then the whole Flacco thing. This has just been wild, hasn't it, Ben?
Absolutely. I mean, considering, for so many conversations amongst all of us for so many years about, what would it take to get the Browns correct, quote unquote. for no matter how much of a master or how smart all of us thought we were, no one could put together what we've seen. I think the cool thing is, and maybe it's because I'm getting older or aging, you start, and I think I take it from all the realms of what I've seen, you start seeing just like how things work in life. And because we've beaten ourselves over the head in my mind with building it the right way, we've been so consumed with the quarterback position that I think it's kind of like in its own weird way, it's shown like they built it the right way for once. And I think that comes with continuity. Having a general manager and a coach that are kind of the same, they speak the same language. And for all the things we've said about ownership, and they're still not perfect, but none of us are, sticking with Stefanski, and I know I'm going to talk to Zach Jackson about this a little bit later because we actually have an A to Z coming as well. Just want to plug that.
Yes.
I think the cool thing is that they have not shied away. And I mean this by like Stefanski, they haven't shied away from bringing in other great coaches. And I think that has helped this identity and given them a full team thing. They're not just relying on one player, one guy, or one style. Yeah. And it's beautiful. And I don't know if you heard Mike McDaniel with the Miami Dolphins earlier this week, but you have other head coaches like watching, because the singular thing that you try to teach in any team sport is it's about us and not I. And the Browns have caught the attention of the whole NFL because they've been able to accomplish that.
It's been a beautiful thing to see, Dre. And what and you knew Bubba very well, know, because you were on the sidelines when Bubba was playing for the Browns. What a triumvirate that they have. The head coach could be coach of the year. The DC could be assistant of the year. And then, of course, Bubba came in and stabilized the special teams. What a triumvirate.
Yes, JT, I'm so glad you brought. And even Alex Van Pelt to a certain extent because of what he does with the quarterbacks. I get Stefanski has looked at it. I mean, you know, we've had people for so long, and I got to pull this sign up as we're talking because my daughter has told us she wants to be a lawyer. So we've made this guy this is a part of her, one of her Christmas gifts.
But we've made did you know he has merch? Did you know that Tim Misney, the lawyer, has merch? Yes. You can get T-shirts with Tim on there. My son came in. It's so funny to see.
My daughter actually, we got her a coffee cup too.
Oh, that's fantastic. I've known Tim for a million years, and I'll have to bring that up to him the next time I see him about the fact that he's got merch. And my son came in from California, and he could not get over seeing Tim Misney on all these billboards all over town. And he thought, what an odd thing. If someone were to come in from outer space, they would see this visage of this man looking at everybody, this bald individual staring at you, and yet he assumes everybody knows what he does. And they do know because he's got brilliant marketing. It's amazing, but I digress.
Yes, and I say that because, I mean, at 11 years old, my daughter, she wants to be a lawyer. She sees all the signs. She talks about Tim Misney constantly. It's one of our inside jokes, about just what's going on in our lives. And that's Cleveland all the way. But I'm glad you bring up Bubba, because Bubba was so instrumental to being a great special teams player when he was here. And what I've noticed, whether it be with Schwartz, the lack of I want to say this right, the lack of worrying about me and making it about us, whether it's getting Myles Garrett to block a field goal against the Indianapolis Colts. That to me is great coaching. That is understanding the talent you have, but really it steps to Stefanski, who. And it's funny because when Bubba was here, there were some tug of wars amongst the coaches about power. And I know there were certain coaches that were, there are certain coaches that were hired here waiting for the head coach to get fired so they would become the head coach.
Got it.
I don't think we talk about that a lot. But being around Tito, and being around great coaches, they usually have great coaches around them and they trust them. And Stefanski has done that, He lets the defense be right. I loved last year. We would have all these great conversations. And I remember Gerard Cherry. I loved talking football with him, especially defense, because, he played it at a very high level. And I remember we were going back and forth with Riz last year about the defense. And I remember saying, I go, dude, they've got all these great one-on-one defenders, but they're playing zone. And I remember talking to Gerard about just the difference in when you're a zone corner or safety. It's more of a intelligence thing, right? But when it's a man thing, it's still intelligence, but you get to go out there and as an athlete, you get to go out there and just be an athlete. And I give AB credit because to me, the biggest switch of everything that's kind of changed the identity of this team is they let the Wards go out and just play cornerback. Newsom becomes one of the best slot cornerbacks in the NFL, and he's playing man. When they're three top, Emerson has become just one of the best stories in football because AB had the ability to say, you know what? We have a defensive coordinator that's a good defensive coordinator, but it doesn't fit our talent. They went out and found someone that fits the talent of their guys. And yet that, to me, it's the maturity of this organization. And I think that's why this season has been so great.
Yeah, you've always joked about when you've been on your pod with Zach about, you need more grownups in the building. And I really think they have a lot more grownups in the building, and it goes with Andrew. They had so many things that hit them this year with all the injuries and stuff. And then it goes back to the building of the roster to the point where they had individuals that could be plugged in that were still we. And they meshed so much better. And I think that's a big reason why they've been successful despite all of these hoops and obstacles they've had to jump through or over.
Yeah, for so many years we've looked at the Steelers and the Ravens as these cornerstone, places of how they do things the right way. And you're right, because you've had some continuity at the coaching staff, and with AB, they speak the same language. They're able to put the teams together. I mean, a perfect example is Za'Darius, Smith, the defensive end. Didn't put up a lot of huge numbers early in the season, but late in the season, he's been able to get after the quarterback. And it's an easy comparison to Jadeveon Clowney, who had much more fanfare. We all remember him coming out of South Carolina, but it just didn't fit. And you know, I don't have to get into individual things that I know, but Za'Darius came in here and he wanted to fit. And he wanted to work with, he wanted to work with Myles Garrett. He figured, hey, if Myles Garrett's over there getting double teamed, that's good for Za'Darius. Where Jadeveon Clowney may have had a little bit of jealousy, and that happens, you know, when you're out there for money. And to me, this has just been really cool because organically, this can continue. This isn't one of those like fly by night type things. I think it makes everyone buy in, and it was really cool. You know, I got to tell you, this has been a cool football season for me individually because obviously I've been on the sidelines. I've covered different ways. I've done high school football on Fridays and college on Saturday, and then, you know, chased the pro team on Sunday. And this year has been really cool. My dad's turned 70. He's retiring. My son has turned, 9, and my daughter's 11. And I've watched like the last 8-9 weeks pretty much in our home with my dad and my son. And it's been really cool to watch this kind of all like evolve and talk about it with them and to see this evolve with them. Because it AJ got we got him a jersey that, he's been begging for a Browns jersey. We got him a Chubb jersey, for Christmas. And that was a big one. And then, and it's like, and Myles Garrett doesn't live far away from us. And, we don't live in the same, we live in the same zip code, but it's a little bit different tax bracket wise. but it's cool because, my son, I feel the excitement that I got to have with the Cleveland Cavaliers growing up. Because where I grew up wasn't far from Ridgefield, so Mark Price didn't live far away from us. Hot Rod and Brad Doherty and Craig Elo, those were, we'd go by the local Dairy Mart. You would see those guys.
Out and about.
And it was normal, and they were normal. I remember going up to, I'll never forget, I went to Craig Elo, and I was like, I was holding eggs for my mom. And I'm like, are you Craig Elo? And he looks down, and he goes, yeah, what's your name? and my son's getting to go through that. My kids are going through that, seeing Myles Garrett at the local, Walmart or whatever else, and then to see him on TV become this. It's been a really cool season to watch with my dad and my son and watch this team kind of grow. I will never forget this year, especially Thursday night, watching the rest of the country kind of really buy into this beautiful moment that the Browns have had.
Yeah, it's been a great transition also for me, Dre, not being there day to day, being a retired guy, and I've been able to be a fan. And what a year to be a fan. When I worked, I was always about down the middle, both sides to the story, honor the craft and all that stuff, and no cheering in the press box. I get that. I honored that. But now that, I'm at home and I'm watching the game, I'm still writing my notes and what have you, but I'm enjoying things and I'm cursing at the TV occasionally, saying, what are you doing? Or then saying, wow, that was a great play. Good coverage. Nice job, Schwartz, on having those kids play man-to-man on that particular series. And good pickup, sending the right guy on the blitz, all that stuff. I really enjoyed this year's iteration of the Browns. And the best feeling is, and you and Zach would joke about it all the time, about December in Berea. And there's nothing that nothing resembles that this year. He built a roster that withstood all of this stuff. The coach has navigated through, shark infested waters. It's been a fun thing to watch.
It really has been. And considering, like you said, all the jokes that we've had, I think for some people they've thought, they only say these guys because they hate this. No, I tweeted something after the game Thursday night, and I think most people got it. I kind of congratulated all the fans that have endured the hell that it's been to be a Browns fan. But also kind of shouted out all those, and all those guys in the background, the ball boys, the janitorial system, the cooks, the security guards. And someone asked me why, and I was like, because, during the chaos of the last, since 1999, those are the people that make it click out in Berea. Those are the people, where I've been at the stadium at, 3 a.m. when they're cleaning up and they're cutting the grass and they're doing things to make that place look beautiful. Zach and I would always talk about December in Berea because we would think about those people that would still go home to Christmas and still have like that bah humbug feeling, despite having the coolest job in Cuyahoga County. It still wasn't fun on New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve, or as Doug Deacon, the old left tackle, once told me after we lost to the Steelers on a Christmas Eve, may have been the year Joey Porter got in the fight with William Green, and it became the beginning of our local Akron guy, James Harrison's career. And I'll never forget walking out with the old left tackle, and he mumbled to me, the potatoes won't taste as good. This won't taste as good. The Steelers ruined every freaking Christmas. You know, like, there is a true story to December in Berea. So those are the people that I think of, because Bah Humbug is real out in Berea when you haven't won. The coach is getting fired. Everyone's looking over their back. You know, the quarterback's not showing up. We've lived through all these things. And I think the Flacco part of this, it's just beautiful symmetry, because it's funny when you do the jobs we've done and you hated the Ravens, even if you were being straight down the line. And I'm sure for you, you've got more stories for about the old Browns, the new Browns than I. It's still difficult, because I remember the Joe Flacco conversations after they won the one Super Bowl. You know, you would fight people in Cleveland. Is he elite? You know, and they'd be like, oh, he's got Ray Lewis, and he's got Ed Reed, he's got, go down the list. And we wouldn't just give the guy credit for being a winning quarterback. And then he comes here for a month, and all of a sudden, we're going to build a statue of Joe Flacco. He's elite.
He's just been, if we can maybe dice down a little bit about what he has done, it's just been remarkable. But I think it all starts with, they've had trouble running the football, and Kevin's not afraid to have this guy fling it all over the yard. And he was a little bit more reticent to have, obviously, PJ or DTR do it, and even to some extent, Deshaun, slinging the ball over the yard. Why is this guy getting off the couch and looking as good as he has with so little chance to get familiar with these guys? It's crazy.
I think it plays a little bit into the conversation that you and I have already had, JT, that as you go through life, and I don't have the life experience that you have, but as you go through life, sometimes the pressure we put upon ourselves, especially when you haven't sat on the couch yet, you haven't been able to hang out with your five kids. I've been very careful. I'm glad I can say this to you. I've been itching to podcast over the last couple of months, but I've also I'm not him, but I'm putting it in I'm putting my feet in his shoes a little bit.
Gotcha.
I've been trying to find the right way to kind of navigate this offseason in a good way, because my kids are getting older, and I understand and see that, like, with what I do from, for 6 months, 7 months during the season, baseball season, I'm not as cool or as important to my kids as I was maybe two or three seasons ago. So now, for the podcast that we're doing right now, I had to text you and say, hey, man, give me 20 more minutes. I'm going to go hang out with AJ at his practice, because I know come April, I'm going to miss things like that. And I know that, the importance of me, because, hey, my kids got their own, like right now, they've got their own stuff going on. They don't care that dad is, I used to be the most important thing. They got their own friends, their own things. So I think there is something, and I'm just putting it in my shoes. I appreciate every little thing and every little moment I get with them, even if I'm annoying them. And when I saw Flacco on the field with his kids and family the other day,
that was cool.
The pressure's off, JT. This is truly the cherry on top for him. And I think, learning offenses, going to New York and trying to do this. And in Baltimore, they never really fully let his wings out, it was, we're a great defense, Joe. Keep the ball, throw it in.
Manage the game.
The game. And now he gets to walk in, and he has a coach that's about the same age as he. They look alike, who understands his talent ability. And you got a group of men that when he goes in that huddle, they look at him with those bright, starry eyes of, hey, you can take us here. Because the Browns were winning without him. It's amazing to me. They won. They beat the San Francisco 49ers with a quarterback. No offense to PJ. But PJ dang near lost the game. To me, if you really look at it, DTR, I think DTR is like, my wife loves him. I think my wife and mom, he's like their favorite guy, because they just, he's young and he's a small kid. But even there, you saw something different. And I think Joe Flacco walks in and he looks around and they trust him. And he sees a guy like Njoku, to me, is like the greatest story. We've been waiting. We've been waiting for him to become guy. So I think the Flacco thing is, there's no pressure, if I throw three interceptions and I got to go home. Okay. But if I keep sleep, Amari Cooper, you keep running these unbelievable patterns. hey, dude, I used to work with some guys like you in Baltimore. I think I can make this work. I think, you know, because the story, there's still the elephant in the room, and that's always going to be there with the Browns. And I think with Deshaun, and I'm hoping, and I want to be positive about this, he can see the excitement and the happiness of just doing the job and not worrying about what the guy in the third row is saying or worrying about living up to that contract. And I think that's what Joe has right now, right? It's kind of like you in this podcast. Like, you know, like, I know you love doing it. I love listening to it. I love seeing like the different places and people you can go, but I don't think it's the same pressure on John Telledge as it was maybe 100%. 30 years ago. You know, it's not the same pressure that you had, you know, 25, 15 years ago to break that LeBron story or to break, who the new quarterback for. You're just doing it out of the pure love of sitting there doing it. And to me, that's what Joe Flacco's doing. He's doing this because he doesn't have to. Doesn't even know how much money he's making, JT.
Yeah.
That to me, but that, you know, like, I've been blessed enough to get to a point where I used to have to count how many dollars I was making when I went to work. And knock on wood, I'm to a place where I just go to work because I love doing it. And I think that makes a big difference. And I think that's what we're watching.
Yeah, I think it's so much fun to see this guy enjoy what he's doing. And I would joke about it when I do like a once a week thing on WEOL radio in Elyria. And I call him Joe Flatline. And in some ways, he's not Joe Flatline anymore, to your point. He's having fun. He's embracing things. He understands, you know, we may put more gravity upon his shoulders carrying the team and what have you. But he doesn't feel that because he senses being part of this community of that's a cohesive unit that's run by potentially the coach of the year and the best defensive player in the National Football League and all these pieces, parts around him, and the city's revved up insanely in love with what the team has done this year. And it's just kind of that kumbaya kind of a thing. I heard Kyle Brandt on the NFL Network make the comparison. I thought it was hilarious. Joe Flacco is the guy that shows up at the golf course at 7 for a 7:30 tee time. He's got a cooler. He's probably got some Tito's in it. He's all chill. Yes. He hooks up with three other guys, and he just goes out and plays a nice, easy-peasy round of golf, shoots like a 74, makes some putts, doesn't. You know, once in a while, you know, hits it into the woods. That's okay. And that's where he is right now. It's just loving playing football. Yeah. You think he doesn't have as much of a body of work of some of the other players, but he's got to be in the convo for a comeback player of the year, no?
Absolutely. I think, you know, no offense, you know, and you can go through different guys. I know Hanlon, obviously, the situation he had in Buffalo is a part of it. Heck,
right.
Even our guy Baker, you know, like Baker's made a hell of a run and helped turn around. But what Flacco has done, it's tremendous. I mean, he's putting up 300 yards per game, JT. And I hope to God, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, I hope that number four, Deshaun Watson, can take in what's making Flacco great. I thought it was great to see the excitement they had, you know, after the one touchdown throw the other night. And I don't know if you find this utopia, because I love the Kyle Brandt thing. I'm going on a golf course without a care. Because that's where that's what we all try to achieve to get in life, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to stay in touch with Terry Francona. And we do. We text. I mean, he always tells me to stay in touch with him. And we do, whether around the holidays or if I see Arizona Wildcats on TV or if I see them playing a big game or whatever else. And my concern for a guy like Tito has been that the structure that has been a part of his life.
Yes.
His whole life. like literally. I know that I'll be texting more with him, say, February 25th. And March 25th, because those are the times where your schedule usually has been impacted by it's time to go to spring training. It's time to put this speech together. And I know that he's going to golf with some of his buddies in Ireland. He's going to do all these great things because he no longer has that schedule put upon him.
Awesome.
And my thing is, though, after he does all of those things, it's going to be July 1st or June 1st. Where will he find that happy place? You know, and I'm going through it with my own father because, you know, he's 70. And like, my sisters have been on me for the last, like, five spring trainings, JT. Got to get dad. It went from just one sister to both, to all sisters, to my own wife. We got to get dad to retire. And you're best friends with dad. You got to get him to retire. Well, now we got it. He's gone through. And I feel like, you know, Monday morning, I'm like, all right, dad, what do you got cooking? What do you want to do? You know, what do you want to do today? he is found a, he loves being around cars, and he's gonna, you know, yeah. he's gonna wax cars and do things like that. I guess what I'm saying is, I think the, you know, I was just reading something with my mom about the stages of happiness in life. Like, you know, 1 through 25, you're just happy to, you know, to go to a ball game and you smile because of hot chocolate or whatever else, or because of a Christmas gift. And then from 25 to 40 are like the most stressful, because you learn about life, you know. Yeah. And I'm at 45, and then they say from 45 on, like, you almost, and my mom calls it, you don't worry about making everybody else happy anymore. You just worry about taking. That's where Joe Flacco is. It's like, hey man, I got a good family, I'm healthy. Let's, you know, I got, his dad is at the game still. He was throwing passes to his dad still. He is the player. He's the comeback player of the year. But also, this is going to rank right up there, JT, with, I can't remember the pitcher. There's a guy that pitched for like the Tampa Bay Rays way back. He was like he was a teacher.
And oh yes, yes.
He was throwing to kids at, you know, the baseball team. They ended up making a Disney movie about it. Joe Flacco is having a Disney, like,
yes.
There's going to be a Disney movie about this. Watch.
It's insane. I mean, everywhere he goes, I've seen pictures of him, you know, posing with some guy at Dunkin' Donuts, and it's so hilarious. My son was in, you know, to visit from L.A. We took him to the airport yesterday, and there we were. We're saying goodbye to my son, and then 45 feet away from us, here walks into the concourse Joe Flacco with his 5 kids and his gorgeous little bride, and I'm like a fan. You know, I'm no longer media guy. I'm going to my wife, honey, that's Joe Flacco, and she says, gosh, his wife's tiny and she's cute. And so it's like, you know, so it's like you're living this life of where you're seeing this guy that's enjoying himself, coming back to the craft that, you know, he thought that everybody gave up on him, and the Browns did not. And they saw something in him, and might have been a desperation, Hail Mary, oh, let's call this guy and see what. But there had to have been intel there that with he and his agent, Joe Linton, that, you know, that's, there is something there, and that he could be productive for you. It's just really worked out. It's so much fun. Let me address the gorilla in the room. And Jason Lloyd wrote about it in The Athletic. Yeah. You know where I'm going. Can you bring him back next year when you have so much invested in number 4?
I think you can when maturity rings true.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that you will.
Right.
I think – here's the, and I think this plays into all of us, and you've been in those rooms out in Berea, and I think the stories kind of write themselves sometimes.
Right.
You know, I think the one thing that was done well in the story you're talking about that was written by Jason is that the truth is the truth because of the money. I mean, you see it playing out in Denver right now with
with Russ.
Russ Wilson.
Russ and Peyton.
Peyton. Yeah, Russ hasn't done anything wrong, per se.
No.
Because of the money structure, it's putting a lot of people in a very odd situation. So if you talk like men and you handle it like men and you say to Joe, you know, Deshaun is our guy, but we would love to have you here. Now, at his age and what he has going on in life, does he want to come in and be the backup? I don't know. I can't speak for him. But if you have a conversation and it's done the right way and the team knows, I think it's beautiful. I would love to see it. I don't think it'll happen. I'm kind of with Jason Lloyd. I kind of think ride this out, and then you pat him on the back and put the – you know, and we'll put up a structure for you, and God bless you. Thank you for taking us. But JT, I also will say, if this guy takes you to the AFC Championship game, I don't know if I can just walk him out the door and pat him on the back.
It's 100%. Santa Claus spends all night delivering all those presents, and then you say, hey, I don't think we need you next year, bro. You know, it's like, come on now, you know, and this is what Flacco's done so far. He's delivering presents all over Northeast Ohio, and hopefully he does it for another 5 games, you know.
I brought this up to Riz, and you guys work together. And this is why I love being able to talk to guys like you and Riz, and not aging you guys. These are my favorite people to talk to. But I brought up, because we had Goldhammer, and we were talking, it was after like Flacco's first win or second win, and we're on KNR, excuse me. And I said, hey, you know, talk about Don Strzok and talk about Gary Daniels.
Yeah.
You know, and that year, and Riz, you know, Riz got this big smile, and he was talking about how tan Don Strzok was because they caught him off the golf course.
He was. It was amazing. Dre, it was, there's, I know a guy here in Northeast Ohio that, you know, I don't know, Strzok wasn't visiting any booths back then. You know, nowadays people can do that by visiting booths, you know what I'm saying? And then this guy comes off, as you said, the golf course, and it was just immaculate. The tan that guy had in 1988, it was spectacular. And Riz is 100%.
I love it because that's what you guys remember. And then we go to Bernie about it, and Bernie's like, man, he helped me understand the game. He slowed the game down for me. I just feel like the folklore of Flacco is going to play into that. And that's what we need. We need JT to do this podcast because I need the Don Strzok conversation with JT, because when I did that with Riz, you could see in the eyes of Hammer and everybody else in our studio.
Glazing
like wide-eyed, like, oh, okay, man, cool. History does repeat itself a little bit at times, you know.
Yeah, you know, you can sometimes, when you say back in my day, it really does have some relevance to this day that we're going through right now, such as you know, this year the four quarterbacks, and I think Shefty put out a tweet about it, and I'm not sure if he was 100% right, but I believe it is four quarterbacks who had multiple starts with and that didn't happen in 88 because I believe Danielson only had one start that year.
Right.
And this year, DTR had multiple, PJ had multiple, Flacco and Deshaun, which is just all the more remarkable that Kevin is still able to stand there in the kitchen with, you know, with the celery's on the floor, you know, the pot of sauce is over there. It's bubbling over and the fish is going stale. And yet he's able to make enough for everybody to eat. It's just incredible what he's done with this roster.
It is, JT. The other thing that I would say is that, and I'm glad we got to give Kevin some real, real true love. Obviously, I think he's what, the first since Marty to take a Cleveland Browns team to the playoffs multiple times. You know, he succeeded in 2020 when none of us had any idea what the heck truly 2020 was when we were walking into it. And my correlation is, because I don't want to take away from Kevin at all, I think there says something about someone who makes the most in the toughest situations. You know, my dad's line always to me, always was, you know, kind of, son, it's easy to do the right thing when everyone's watching.
Yeah.
You learn more about yourself when no one's watching. That's when it's hard to do the right thing. When it's midnight and it's like, you got to make the right decisions. And there's something special about people that can make the tough decisions when it's the most difficult and get the most out of you. And he has that ability. And let's be honest, with all the coaches that we saw come through Berea, and no matter what their status was, no matter what they had accomplished before they had come here, it was almost like Mike Snyder would say that, he said this so well. And we were talking about our guy, Phil Savage. He goes, man, you could be a priest. You could have everything and done right. But it seems like you walk in those doors in Berea and it just like, all, you know what, hits the fan. And then we find out who these people are. When things hit the fan with Kevin Stefanski, he seems to be the best. And I think that says a lot about how he can calm people. He can make people believe. I'll go back to this. And to me, this is what the season is really about. I was in Kansas City with the baseball team. It was a Thursday night game against the Steelers. I won't say names, but, you know, it was a doubleheader Monday night game.
Yeah.
And it's cool. You know, it's cool to be with the group of guys that I'm with. I'm with Rick and I'm with Matt, and we're with our whole baseball, you know, team. And we didn't play that. We played a day game that day because Beyonce was supposed to play at night in KC. So we're like, you know, we're fans. We're going to get to watch Monday Night Football. And, man, you see Chubb go down. And we're in Kansas City. We're not, you know, in Cleveland. Yeah. We're not in Pittsburgh. We're not in Carolina or New Orleans, I believe, where the other game was. And there were Browns fans. And I remember, like, watching that. I was like, man, we can't hide in here, you know, like –
yeah.
As soon as we cheer or something, people are going, no. And when Chubb got hurt, it was like a funeral. It was kind of like, man, we can't get right. We can't. Well, and I mentioned that because Chubb is, and I remember the players saying, we have to play this season like Nick Chubb would.
Yeah.
And you hear players say stuff all the time and you're like, yeah, right. But in a lot of ways they have, JT. And I think that goes back to Kevin Stefanski. And they brought the running game back a little bit. And I'd be remiss not to bring up the offensive line coach because he is the best.
Yeah, Callahan, amazing.
Callahan is amazing. It's amazing because no matter who they put at tackle, no matter who the two guards are phenomenal, by the way.
They really are.
But Tonio and Teller, I'm 46. I'm 46 in a couple months. I think I could run a trap play and get 6 yards behind those two. That's how good they are.
Hey, Kareem Hunt is on line one, Dre.
I know. He's taking all my touchdowns. But think about it. All offseason, people wrote about him losing the stuff. He's lost the stuff. He's lost the stuff. Dude's got like 10 touchdowns because of that great offensive line. I just love what they've done. And the cool thing about this for my kids, like, you know, my daughter and one of her friends are doing slime right now, and I'm hearing them talk about, hey, the Browns are in the playoffs. It's cool for me because growing up here, man, I remember Bernie. I remember my aunt calling and you know, and you know, she's calling after touchdowns going, Super Bowl. Yeah. Like, we have that kind of same feel here this year. And there's so many people that like Kevin Stefanski and this coaching staff that we can bank for doing this the right way.
Yeah, it's really cool. And also what we're not seeing in recent times is people complaining that all he does is sit there and stare at the Denny's menu. You know?
Yeah,
I mean, he's coaching. And I love what he's done in some instances. Some of the little wrinkles he put in, how he schemed open David Bell a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
That wide open touchdown and throw by Flacco on a 4th-and-3 or whatever the heck the play was. You know, I just – and, again, I think what we've also seen from Kevin, and you alluded kind of to it earlier, is his sense of the bigger – of the big picture is better. Yes. And I think with experience and more reps, that type of stuff, you become more adept at seeing everything other than, you know, you see the forest for what it is as opposed to just, oh, that's a maple. You're standing right in front of it. You see the whole forest and you see the canopy where the, you know, the monkeys are. And then you see down below, there is the snakes on the, you see the whole picture and how you can navigate your way through that place. And I think that's what he's done. He's matured. He certainly has earned an extension. I would absolutely say, and I wasn't always, you know, gung ho for this guy. And I will admit that, you know, I think he's grown into the job and shown the maturity. And Marty did that too, Dre, if we can go back a few years. I remember Marty, you know, I was there at the news conference when Sam was there. Sam literally was sitting at the podium with his successor, which was probably the classiest thing you ever see, but that was Sam. And how they handed over the reins and Art's there, and they handed the reins over to Marty. And Marty knew the next year, you know, he had Mack and Biner in 85. Just run the football. You know, come on. And then, you know, bring Bernie in. Bernie gets to throw the ball more and all those types. It's just fun to see. Dre, the Browns are one of the best stories in sports now that everybody wants to talk about them. So I look forward to just, you know, seeing where it goes in the playoffs. Let's move on a little bit here. And we've already gone a half hour on the Browns, so I don't want to do too much more. And I could talk 5 hours on the Browns. What we saw, and we're recording this on Saturday, excuse me, after Ohio State lost to Missouri. We're at an odd crossroads, aren't we, here? Not just with the Scarlet and Gray, but with college football, right?
Yeah. It's funny. I've got a text message with a group of guys talking about where college football is at. Crossroads is a good word for it because I've always been around college football, and whether it be uncles that have coached, whether it be having the opportunity to play. I love the game of football. I've always hated that the college coaches would be able to make certain amounts of money and the kids didn't. The NCAA, I think, has opened up a bag, and I don't think they know how to put the toothpaste back in.
You're right.
And you see, you know, you go through the whole college football season, and Deion Sanders, I was just reading the Sports Illustrated where Deion Sanders is, you know, the sportsman of the year, and how, you know, he came about with Colorado at the right time with the portal and this and that. And even as the man of the year, he couldn't win any of his last 4 or 5 games.
Yeah.
I think for all of these coaches, whether it's, you know, at Alabama with Nick Saban, who is one of the best of all time, I think we're all kind of – this is a filling out process of what's it working, is. What's not going to work. How do you keep your own players? How do you develop? I think watching that Ohio State game last night, I think I tweeted something to the effect of, like, I feel like I'm getting Ryan Brewerd again. And there's only so many people that'll get that.
Right. Right.
But if you remember, that was a kid from Ohio who wanted to go to Ohio State. Ohio State meant so much to him. John Cooper wanted nothing to do with him because he didn't have the size, speed, and the look of what you wanted from a national-type team that Ohio State wants to be. And for me, what I watched last night reminded me a lot about, and I don't want to compare just to John Cooper, and I don't want to kill Ryan Day, but
yeah,
there has been something to what Lou Holtz has said. And in my opinion, you went from the John Cooper era to a guy that recruited me, who I'll always treasure, in Jim Tressel, who understood Northeast Ohio, who understood what Ohio State football meant to the whole state of Ohio, who understood what that last game of the season meant when you went, when you went to play that team up north. And he recruited, he still got national guys, but he recruited and made sure he got the top five guys in Ohio every single year. And I don't want to be a homer, but I think that's important. And I think you go to Urban Meyer, and Urban was from Ohio, but he, because of his national, the prominence, and because he had won nationally at Florida, and because he was so much on speed and hell-bent on making sure Ohio State caught up with the SEC teams.
100%.
I feel like we've lost a little bit of what it means to be Ohio State Buckeye. And JT, what I watched last night, Missouri was more excited to play in that Cotton Bowl on a Friday
night
in Dallas, Texas, than Ohio State Buckeyes.
And they
Ryan Day, I'm not one of those guys that, going run to you all down to Columbus right now. But Ryan Day has a hell of a he's got to overcome a lot right now.
He does.
Whether it be recruiting, whether it be getting the right quarterbacks, whether it's dealing with the portal, he's going to have a new boss. I just feel like in the Michigan games and in the bowl game, putting on that jersey used to mean something to 80% of those guys. I'm not saying it didn't mean anything to those kids last night, but it means something when it's your hometown team. It's a little bit like we're talking about the Browns. And I just didn't see that last night. And I feel like – and the other problem I had, Ryan Day is one of these new school coaches where they want to be empty. And okay, it's fine. And he's developed C.J. Stroud, some great quarterbacks. But when you got kids back there that probably had 15 snaps and you've got an empty set and the other team is just blitzing their outside linebackers every play, where is the coach? We talked about with Stefanski. Hey, just because I like running a certain offense doesn't mean I run it if I don't have the right personnel to run it.
Right.
Last night was a time where I was yelling and screaming, bring some tight ends in, bring a fullback in.
Help this kid.
Help this kid out. If my son is one of the top quarterbacks in the nation right now, and we watched that last night, I don't know if I can send my kid to Ryan Day right now, because that, to me, I didn't like what he did to both of those quarterbacks is what I would say.
I agree with you, Dre, and I think we're also going to the point where last night the kids were, as you said, left out to dry. Ryan Day not getting Ohio per se the way obviously Urban did and certainly Jim Tressel did. Look at the Jim Tressel, the game of the century in 2006 against the Wolverines, and all those plays were made by Northeast Ohio kids.
Yes.
And then look at encouraging note, what's coming down the pike. You got the two kids, the twins from St. Ed's. You've got Witten from Glenville. You got West from Glenville. You got more kids from, Jim Tressel used to say, the state of Youngstown, or the kids that get it. And I think that's a good thing to see. But they need more guys on the roster to let these kids understand how big the Michigan game is. Just the way Miles Garrett, Joel Batonio, David Njoku, some of the old warriors of the bad years for the Browns, per se, can tell and by their vibe give off that sense that being a Cleveland Brown is really a special thing, despite recent history and all the jokes about December.
Right. And Jim Brown, I mean, seeing that number 32 on there, I think that's a part of it when you go to the Browns.
That's cool.
And the other thing is for this, and I hope people that listen to this podcast understand this, this isn't me piling on Ryan Day. I think Ryan Day is a microcosm of where college football is at right now.
Yeah.
It's a different animal, man, than what it's been for a very long time. And Ryan Day is kind of caught in the – he's caught – like, you can't blame him. He comes here to help out Urban Meyer, and they've got – he's got some of the top classes in the world. Urban has his thing, and he ends up getting the keys to the Porsche. Well, I went to a high school where 16-year-olds sometimes got brand-new Corvettes or brand-new – Camaros, no offense to them, but a lot of them end up flipping them or getting in accidents because they weren't ready for that type of power yet. My dad had me driving they called it the ambulance. I was driving a 1980 Suburban. It was as big as my living room. But
Yeah,
world right now for Ryan Day, man. And you, I mean, these bowl games, and I know I'm going to sound like the old fuddy-duddy, but has anyone been excited about any of these bowl games all week long and
no.
how we're doing things now? And that's unfortunate, but that's kind of where we're at in our world.
I agree with you, Dre. Last night, even the Ohio State game, for the first time, I just was not getting worked up over stuff. I was taking everything into account, the fact that, you know, third string quarterback, no Marvin Harrison, you know, this guy out, that guy out. And so football's got to understand that even as they increase the, you know, the amount of teams that will be in the playoff. All right, this I saw a stat, something like 2,500 guys in the portal right now, 50 quarterbacks. You know, these kids have, you know, have a right to do it. But what really interesting thing I saw, I want to get your opinion on this or thoughts. Some of these quarterbacks, you don't even know if they're moving for the sense of a better spot for them, but if they're just looking for that NIL cash.
Yeah.
And because when you go into the portal, it almost increases your worth versus you just stay and take it. And that's a weird thing to kind of to digest, because I'm a kid that my dad said, you know, you see it to the end kind of
yes,
kid.
Sir.
And it's
yes,
not
sir.
Happening nowadays. It is.
JT, no, it's not. And I got a lot of buddies. I don't know what's going to happen with my kids. They love sports. And like you said, my dad shows up to all of AJ's and Isabella's games. And so I don't have to tell him the rules of the not rules of sports. And, you know, and, you know, I tell my kids, the last thing I tell my kids before a game is what my parents told me is, hey, Your teammates will remember you being a good teammate or bad teammate more than they will how many goals you scored or how many touchdowns you score or anything else. I mentioned that because loyalty means something around. And you know, you look at that Missouri game last night, and I found myself telling my kids stories, and they, you know, by the time I got halfway through the story about the running back, both my kids were like, all right, Dad, we're going to go watch a movie in the back. But you know, the story like about the running back, you know, for Missouri was great. The kid was door dashing for 10 hours a day. It meant he's from the St. Louis area. It meant something to play for Missouri. He was a walk on. He was at a Division II. Those are the stories that motivate me. And when I hear the portal stuff, because I've got buddies now, I got buddies who, you know, their kids are hell. There's like a portal in high school. You know, Maslin finally won a high school.
Yeah, they got their first dub. Yep.
And I'm
so
happy for them. But I got to tell you, I know about six kids that live 10 minutes away from me that should be at another school. And I won't put that, you know, like,
I know.
And I got friends that are coaching, at all these schools. And, you know, we can talk about it on a college level. But man, JT, it's happening to 15 and 16 year olds. I got a 15 year old nephew. And I mean, he's over Christmas Day. And he's talking about, well, if this doesn't work out. And my dad and I are looking at him going, no. You're going to go to that school for 4 years, son, unless your parents leave. Like, I want to be careful. I get when you see all these dollar signs out here. I always remember it this way. I remember when LeBron was at St. V, and it's funny now, you know, he got the Hummer. And I remember they were joking. They put because we had to pay for parking back then. And when I had to drive that Suburban back before LeBron, I remember it was like 30, 40 bucks, you know, to get paid for parking at St. V. And, you know, I had to pay it. That was how it worked. And I remember at St. V, like, LeBron's mom didn't want to pay it because her thing was, do you see how much money my son is bringing into this school? Do you understand that you guys don't even play home games in our gym because of my son? And I remember hearing her say those things back then, and, you know, 20 plus years ago. Think about it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. I was like, she's right. Like, she how is. Can you? And you fast forward 20 years, you know, since LeBron kind of broke. I don't want to say broke, but he did kind of break the bank and make us all realize, okay, there is a business out here for these kids. What is fair? You know, is it fair that Urban Meyer is making $10 million and the kid that, you know, from Glenville, you know, can't buy it? You know, Chris Webber, when he was at Michigan, I couldn't buy a burger on campus, but I see everybody walking around with my jersey. I feel like because we didn't do this fairly all along, it's the wild, wild west right now, JT. And we've forgotten the whole great bit about what college sports is about. And I don't know if amateur sports even exist anymore. And I hate saying it that way.
Yeah.
Man, I don't care if my, and this is me personally, I don't care if my kid gets a scholarship or not. If he does, great. If he doesn't, great. I just want them to enjoy competition and enjoy the camaraderie of what teammates, because at the end of the day, at 45, almost 46 years old, before I came on with you, I'm still texting with some of my high school teammates and buddies, and I'm back to playing basketball two or three times a week right now. And I'm playing with guys out in Medina, and I'm playing with guys in Strongsville on Thursday nights. And my wife's laughing at me. She's like, she calls them my new friends. And all I'm realizing, and I would love to go in these locker rooms and tell these kids that are worried about the next NIL deal, money is great, but it ain't better than sitting around with guys and talking about playing together and having fun together and competing together. And I feel like we're losing that, and that scares me a little bit.
Yeah, it's got to be the right situation for you. It can't just be about the money, and we focus so much on the money. And I guess if I were to be honest with you, Dre, I've been reading a lot about Leonardo da Vinci and stuff. I mean, my God, he entered the transfer portal several times. He went from one house of Medici or Medici, and he was creating artwork for other houses if they had some kind of a contract for him to make a piece of art. And this is 600 years ago. Wow. So, talent wants to be recognized, and talent wants the Benjamins. And again, I agree with your quote, Dre, about, I mean, my God, kids are walking around with my jersey on, and yet you can't even buy me a hamburger. And I'm helping to build this place. College sports, they're at a crossroads. And one final wrinkle to our argument or our chat here is, when you've got all this stuff going on with fantasy sports being as big as they are, and now gambling being so open, boy, this is a can of worms, my friend. It's crazy.
Pandora's box is wide open. Today there's a bunch of college basketball going on up at Rocket Mortgage. And I'm my buddy, all of us are going. And my one buddy, he went to West Virginia. And West Virginia plays Ohio State. And one of the last things he asked me, because we're all talking about meeting up, and he goes, "Hey, you can bet on games up there, right?" And I just shake. And it got, we all love sports for our own reason. I got to give this story, fantasy football.
Yeah.
And this is one of those kickers. This is one of the kicks.
Tell me about your fantasy football team,
nobody
Brian.
Cares. But this is where I'll give it to you. I have pretty good team. Zach and I put a team together, and Zach's kind of let me run it because we run each other's teams or whatever. We had the best team in the regular season, scored the most points. We get to the semifinal game last week, and we go against a guy named Cooper. Cooper knocked me out of the playoffs, and then didn't play 4 days later. Right before the kickoff on Thursday, Zach texts me, and he goes, "No matter how smart you think you are, when the guys don't want you to win, the guys don't want you to win.
Dre, that's where we are, my man. That is absolutely where we are. Well, we've covered three strong topics here, and I reserve the right to ask you back a few months from now, and we kind of revisit some of these things, or there'll be a whole, maybe we'd obviously talk about your day job, the Guardians. But it's always a blast to chat with you. You know my affection for you and your beautiful bride and your family and what have you. And this has been fun, my man. This has been fun. Thanks a lot.
Me too. And you mean the world to me. I appreciate what you do. I love seeing the interviews that you're still doing. You're still kicking everybody's butt. This is the best retirement I've seen in our business, because you still are appointment watching. And I mean that. Thanks. And you told me a couple of weeks ago, you're talking to Robert Smith, and you get my competitive juices going, where I'm like, oh man, we could do this or do this. Thank you though, because like I said, this has been a cool year for me. I know that when you did the other podcast during baseball season, I was out in Arizona. Yeah. I had my family with me then, and I've tried to take a big step in understanding that we're all not mortal, that we're gonna lose certain things and certain people. So it's been a fun year for me to kind of, like I said, I've hung with my parents a lot more, hung with my kids a lot more. But I appreciate having conversations like this, because I've been itching to do it so much so that when I get done with this, I'm going to do an A to Z. We've waited all season long to do it, but thank you for everything you're doing. Happy New Year to everybody out there. And geez, I mean, We have a chance. As my buddy Ricky Smith, our buddy Ricky Smith just got married out in Las Vegas.
I can't believe that. I cannot believe
that.
No, that's
a whole other podcast. Trust
yes,
me.
It is.
And I said to him, you got married in Vegas. And I go, you know where the Super Bowl is being played. I even said to my bride the other night, I go, honey, I go, if the Browns go to the Super Bowl, we may have to get to our house in Arizona a little bit early and drive over from Arizona and go over to Vegas for the Super Bowl. I can't believe I said it. But that's how cool this year has been.
Yeah. And you know what? And it's stupid not to to poo-poo that. I mean, this is sports. And,
right. You
know, I've heard people compare this year's edition of the Browns. I think it was Emmanuel Acho, former Brown. You remember him. He's a big guy on media. Comparing them to the 2017 Eagles. Right. You know, all the injuries, blah, blah. So, I mean, that's a podcast for another day. Once again, Dre, awesome to have you, my man. Give my best to Jen and your kids, and look forward to talking to you soon.
You got it. God bless you guys. Appreciate you, JT. Keep up the great work. Keep pushing us. Can't wait to see you back on the high school football fields come August. But we got a lot of other things to get to before that. Thank you, JT.
We do. Have a good one, buddy. See you, man.
Thanks very much to Andre Knott. You can find him on social media, on Instagram and on Twitter /X at Dre Knott. It's always a pleasure to sit down with Dre, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation. And best wishes to you and yours in 2024. And how about this? Let's make an appointment. We'll see you again next week for the next edition of Telich Talks. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you then.